Hello and welcome to the Aster Economic Week in Review. My name is John Eckstein. I'm the Chief Investment Officer of Aster Investment Management. I am joined today by my friend and colleague, Nick Porter. Nick, hello.
Hey, John. Welcome to Snow New York.
More Snow New York. Yeah, we got an inch here in Harlem. And how much did you get in Brooklyn? An inch?
About the same, yeah. Imagine that.
Eerie. I think we will start, as we usually do, by going through sort of the economy in a nutshell. Then we'll talk about Powell's speech. I think it's probably the most interesting thing that happened last week. Go through the labor market, high frequency data, and hit some international highlights, and maybe one or two other things. As far as the snapshot of the economy goes, I see the economy as being in a bit of a holding pattern, a little bit of malaise. We haven't made any progress in the recovery in the last 3 or 4 months. And that's what we're waiting for, right? We're waiting for the virus news to get good enough that people start going back to work, going back to jobs, stuff starts reopening. I hope you'll see that soon, but we haven't seen that yet. Do you have any bones to pick with that, Nick?
No, I think that's right. We've, you know, since the depths of the pandemic have come back quite a ways, and now we're sort of at this stagnant period. Q4 GDP for the United States was down 2.5% year over year, and that's sort of where we'd stayed in this first quarter, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Or another way to think about it is looking at the labor market, where the improvement we saw over the summer has dissipated, and you know we've added net no new jobs, and we've lost jobs in the last 3 or 4 months net.
Right.
We need to not do that. We have 10 million jobs in the hole.
Right.
So I like to start with Powell's speech. It's not that there's, you know, anything exactly new, but, you know, I think for a central banker, I've been listening or reading every speech by the chairman of the Fed for 30 years. And this is kind of something new in some ways, in that there's a lot of opportunity for him right now to say that in the aggregate, things are getting back to normal, and so we're going to get back to normal. But he's definitely not saying that, right? He's saying that at present, we're a long way from a good labor market. He's saying that there's a lot of disproportional pain in the lower ends of the income segment. He's saying that, you know, historically marginalized people in the United States are having a much harder time than the opposite, and that he thinks that the Fed can address that. And furthermore, and I want to read something to him. Recognizing the economy's ability to sustain a robust job market without causing an unwanted increase in inflation, the statement, he's talking about the revised policy statement. Statement says our policy decisions will be formed by our assessments of shortfalls of employment from its maximum rather than deviations from its maximum level. So he says, this means that we will not tighten monetary policy solely in response to a strong labor market. So I think he is looking at the Fed's tightening in 2015 as a mistake and saying we're not going to do that again, and saying specifically later on that the Fed's going to allow extended periods above 2% inflation to sort of be symmetric with extended periods below 2% inflation. What do you think of that speech?
Yeah, I mean, I think you really captured it, particularly when you read the statement. So, I mean, the Fed is an institution like any other in that it takes a while to adjust and it sort of learns lessons from history slowly. But present in that speech was really a recognition of the dynamics in 2018 and 2019, where by any other standards, we had quite a tight labor market. Inflation just didn't really pick up. And so there's sort of this thought that there's some secular reasons behind that. And the Fed has really adjusted their thinking, not just in the pandemic, but pre-pandemic, that we can let things run a little bit hotter than we might have previously in the past. And so I think what he's really saying in this speech is that we're going to wait till we see the white of inflation's eyes, so to speak, even though the market commentary and sort of economic pundits these days are worried about overheating.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think one thing I wanted to emphasize, what I got from this speech that I think is distinctive, aside from being sort of chill on the inflation front, is how concerned Powell is, and I think it's completely genuine, how concerned he is with the bottom quartile, let's say, of the labor market, right? The people who have not added to their median incomes in the last 10 or 20 years. And like that is front and center on his mind. And I think that I've never heard a Fed talk about a Fed chair talk about that before in such earnestness, and especially when he has an excuse not to. So
right. I mean, the Fed has traditionally said, I mean, back looking back a decade or so, that monetary policy is a fairly blunt tool, that when the economy is doing well, it lifts all ships. But addressing inequality is really the domain of fiscal policy. But I think in 2019, what you saw is that as the labor market gets increasingly tight, wage gainers are improving on the bottom quartile of earners. And that's sort of a recognition from the Fed that allowing monetary policy to be looser than it may be otherwise is really effective in helping low-income folks.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And so like when Bernanke was speaking, 8 or 9 years ago, like he was saying specifically, like the Fed could impact the short run cycle, but the longer term macro issues was not their problem. I guess that is probably true in some sense, but it underappreciates how important the short term cyclical factors are in addressing issues of equity and broadly shared prosperity.
Right. And now just to be clear, I think the Fed would rather that they don't have to touch this, right? That this issue is sort of off their plate and that politicians can handle it. But in the lieu of any constructive measures from Congress or the legislature, this has sort of fallen in their domain almost.
Yeah, I think that's true. Though again, like the Fed, Powell has an opportunity now. If he wanted to get out of it, he could, right? Like he does not have to do this with a $2 trillion additional stimulus coming. We focus on the poorest Americans. An infrastructure bill waiting in the wings. He definitely does not. He does not have to do this if he didn't want to. He's got plenty of excuses not to.
Sure.
So I think he's just trying to get another term as chair, right? He comes up in a year, I think, right?
I think that's right.
It's 4-year terms for the chair, not for the governor. The chair and governor are different. So he could potentially stay on as a governor, but not as a chair. Okay, let's switch to the labor market. We see in aggregate about 1.1 million people applied for unemployment assistance last week, about 800,000 for state unemployment, about more than 300,000 for pandemic unemployment assistance. That number is about unchanged from the previous week, down a smidge, and claims are where they were 4 months ago. If you look at the continuing claims, the level of people who are continuing to draw unemployment insurance, that number has been erratic due to some programs expiring for a day and people getting kicked off and going back on. But now it's definitely up from where it was a month or so ago altogether. So there's no sign of things turning around in the claims number as of yet.
Right. I would caution those of you at home from reading too much into the week-to-week movements and jobless claim numbers, but I think it's fair to say that although they're much lower than they were at the peak of pandemic, they're still quite elevated. You know, prior to the pandemic, you would expect a 150 number or something like that, right? And so although they might have declined and they're sort of squirreling around this 750 number, they're still quite high. And that comports with our view of the economy as being in sort of this stagnation until things open up in earnest.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I want to see is those numbers in a steady and sustained decline, even if it's not down to, normal. It's going to be hard to get there soon, but on a downward trend, like we were seeing, in June, July, August, things were getting better. They weren't back to normal, but they were getting better week after week after week. And I want to see something like that happening again.
Agreed.
Also on the labor market front, I just wanted to point out, when we talk about the headline unemployment number is 6.3%, you're like, gosh, we made it a lot of the way back. Like we were only at 3%. But, that definitely understates what's really going on. So another thing, just to mention Powell again, he was saying that if you correct for some errors in the unemployment number, a better number would be closer to 10%. Or you can also think about like just the number of people who are receiving unemployment insurance benefits, that's more than 8% of the labor force right now. So I think, it's worth bearing in mind, the direction is maybe right, maybe wrong, but the number is definitely higher than 6.3% of the labor force, I think.
Yeah, agreed. And if you look at U6, which includes some part-time workers and some other adjustments, that's at about 1 in 10 people, so 11.1%. meet the U6 measure.
Also, digging into some other labor market data and just noticing that we talked a little bit about how hard it is to sort of take the earnings numbers at face value, but because of the compositional effects. But if you do some adjustments, you'll see that the median hourly wage is basically even, but what's going down a lot is the number of hours. So it seems like employers are probably a little bit, and we've heard something about this, a little bit competing for employees on wages, but you know, cutting people's hours so that the total weekly wage bill is down, even as hourly wages are stable.
Yeah, and there's a similar effect in things like in spending, which is really often quoted as a percentage of disposable income, which of course has tanked during the pandemic.
Right, right. Good point. I'd like to go through some high frequency data. Some of this is data that we didn't cover a lot before the pandemic. This is all basically telling the same story that we were saying in our snapshot report. If you look at JPMorgan Chase, just like tells you what its customers are spending. They've got a lot of customers, you know, 25 million, whatever. Those numbers are down from where they were a year ago, down further from a trend growth that you'd expect. Still down, you know, in the 5 to 10% area. And again, like not improving over the last 4 or 5 months. If you look at TSA security clearances, those went up around Christmas, but basically went right back down afterwards, even on the last 4 or 5 months. You look at the Google, there's a bunch of mobility reports out there, which basically buy your cell phone data and see where you're going. And those are all, as far as I can tell, you know, basically flat, whether it's to work or to retail. We mentioned jobless claims already. And so, you know, on the higher frequency stuff, I'm not seeing a ton of signs of encouragement. I would guess one thing that is positive is the report that's put out by the Temporary Work Association, right? So there's a trade group for like people who hire temps, and they their little index is actually up and positive. And so there's sort of a theory that people buy temps first before they buy labor, and because it's easier to get rid of a temp than it is to fire somebody. So maybe that's a good canary in the coal mine for the future.
Yeah, I hope so.
And say briefly, we talk about inflation a fair amount. Inflation is quite stable, right? Like in reality, like all the inflation worries are sort of in the future. And, you know, core CPI is going down. It's not quite where it was in March or April, but it's lower than it has been in the previous 5 years. A lot of that is coming in the services sector. CPI commodities, ex food and energy, so are going up. Food and energy, some of that's going up too. Then the services are going down. A lot of that has to do with rent and owner's equivalent rent, but it's other things too, you know, medical care and stuff like that. So, you know, when inflation happens, it's not happening yet, right? It's like going to be, we're talking about it a lot, but it hasn't happened yet.
Right. And I think if you are one of those people who are following market-based measures, so you know, the 10-year going up, the yield curve steepening, inflation break-evens increasing. You might be a little bit surprised by the fact that CPI printed at 1.4% year over year. And my answer to that is simply that people are concerned about what happens post-lockdown. Will consumers have flush wallets when there's additional stimulus, when there's constrained supply? So people are looking through and around the corner a little bit. And I don't think the CPI reports will really be interesting until Q2, Q3, and that's when we'd really start to see any tick up if we are indeed running hot.
Yeah, we're definitely going to see a tick up. We're definitely going to see a tick up. I don't see any way around that.
Right. And the question is really, does it prove transitory or is it more sustained?
Agreed. Agreed. Do you want to bring up the rest of the world?
Yeah. So since I was last on the podcast, the end of January, we got preliminary GDP numbers for the euro area. And they were a little bit worse than you might expect if you're looking around the world, although if you've been following Europe, perhaps it's no surprise. So just for reference, in the United States, quarter over quarter annualized, we grew by 4% in the fourth quarter. That's down 2.5%, as I said, year over year. In the euro area as a whole, GDP slowed by 0.7% decline quarter over quarter annualized. But there was a pretty wide disparity in countries within the euro area. So for example, Germany ticked up by 0.1%, Let me just look up Italy here. Italy declined by 2% quarter over quarter annualized. So there's some interesting little facets that you can gain from that. Some of that, of course, has to do from continued lockdown. Some of that has to do with domestic political struggles. Some of that has to do with fiscal stimulus. But it is nonetheless interesting to see that despite some mutualization of debt, a common fund, and of course a common central bank, that there is a pretty wide disparity based on the path of the virus and the lockdowns. And that sort of reinforces what we've been saying here in the United States, is that the story of the economy is really the story of the pandemic, at least for now.
Yeah, but the other thing that's has been different is that the United States has and is planning to spent a much more fiscal support for the economy than Europe has on the whole.
Absolutely.
That's definitely part of it too. And, I don't think that part of the European plan is to give away a little bit of a pot of money to everybody to try and bring them back. So like Italy is going to get 200 billion euros, which sounds like chump change compared to what we're doing, but still it's a lot for the Germans and the Dutch to agree to writing Italy a check. And I think there's this big political fight over who's going to be the next prime minister so they can, whoever gets to spend the $200 billion.
That's right. We'll see what Super Mario manages to pull off.
Right. So Europe has not done as good a job of us as a whole getting out of the hole. And we will see how they do in the future, though, with the German and hence Euro-wide reluctance to spend money, I think they're going to have another long, slow period. I think we will leave it there, unless you have anything else to add, Nick.
That's it for me, John.
So next week, we've got a full week of data, and we'll probably go over the housing market in some detail. We've got some more price data coming out. We've got retail sales, so it should be, and industrial production should be an exciting week. Next week. In the meantime, you can get more information from our Aster website. That's Aster IM. That's IM for investmentmanagement.com, where we've got a load of charts. Or you can get the Aster Research app from your favorite app store and keep up to date with what we see out there. Nick's got a good blog post coming up too, summarizing the economy. So look out for that. And we will see you next week, Nick.
All right. Thanks, John.
Bye.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.